The Torah has a din of Yibum and Chalitza that runs as follows. If a man is married and he dies and he left no children, not from this wife, not from another wife, not from any other sort, from a Jaina, whatever, so then the Torah says that his wife, the Amana, is forbidden to she's forbidden to marry anybody. She has to have either Yibum or Chalitza. Which is preferable? Is Mitzvah Yibum preferable or Mitzvah Chalitza preferable? So the Gemara has a Machlokes HaTanai. And the Gemara says that the Pesach changed. That originally, you have several times in Shas. That the Rabbanim used to pass in one way, and then the trend was that they reversed the Pesach. That's called the Mishnah Rishon and the Mishnah Achron. Mishnah Achron means that the Beis Din later changed the Pesach. So originally, the Pesach always used to be Mikubal, that Mitzvah Yibum is Kodemus and Mitzvah Chalitza. It's a simple reading of the Chumash. So it's preferable to do Yibum. And Loyachot Kvish, Lakaha says Yibum, and if he refuses to do the Mitzvah Yibum, so then second best is to do Chalitza. And in later generations, the Gemara says that the Chachamim reversed the Pesach and they followed the notion of Abashol, one of the Tanaim, whose opinion it is that Mitzvah Chalitza is Kodemus and Mitzvah Yibum. How does he get that from the Chumash? Chalitza's Kodemus and Mitzvah Yibum doesn't sound like that at all. So the Gemara explained that it's based on his idea that we're only permitted to do Yibum, even after all of the problem. The woman is Eshetach, and Eshetach is an Issacharit. So the Torah allows you to marry, to live at the Eshetach, for the sake of fulfilling the Mitzvah Yibum. Abishol is of the opinion that the only time the Torah was mata, the insulation sach, is if you're intending Hashem Mitzvah. But if the reason why you're doing Yibum is because she's good looking, or because she has a lot of money, or because you had difficulty finding a shidduch, nobody ever wanted to marry you, and now this girl is stuck and she has no choice, and if she doesn't have a choice, if she refuses to marry you, so you can't, you're not allowed to rape the woman. The Gemara says that you can do Yibum Bal Korcha, doesn't mean you're committed to attack the woman. It means if you did Yibum Bal Korcha, you're kona. But it doesn't mean you're committed to. Certainly a prohibition. So this is the right to attack your own wife. Certainly to devour this Yibum Bal Korcha. So if he does the Yibum with any other motive in mind other than purely religious motivation, I'm sure there's other opinion that he's violating the Yisra Eshesach. And Korah B'yena Elias Havlad Mamza. And in my opinion, Korah B'yena, he thinks that it may even be that the blood of the Mamza. There is a dispute among the Rishonim that this notion of Abishol is min ha-Torah with the Rabbanim. He's really saying it's min ha-Torah, that you have to have, this is Nivam of Abishol on the Testament base, and Chorus at the end of the first Peretz. What's it doing in Chorus? In Chorus, the first Peretz speaks about Pidyon Petach Hamor. It says you have an option, either Petach Hamor Tifta Deseh, Tivloi Sifteh V'arachto. So the Chumash gives you an option of either doing A or B, and it's preferable to give a set to the Kohen. If you don't give a set, then Barach, you have to break the neck of the Petach Hamor. So the Mishnah lists off a few other situations where you have a choice of A or B, and which is Kodem to which. So it says there that it's just even Kodem to Mitzvah Chalitza. And the Gemara discusses, is that really so? The Gemara says not. The Bezer Shachrei and the Mishnah Achrei are reversed the Pesach, and they pass them like Abishol. And Mitzvah Chalitza is Kodem to Mitzvah Chalitza. So that's the question whether this idea of Abishol is really a Din Min HaTorah, or a Din Min HaRabbanan. Whatever it is, that's how the Gemara says, that they reverse the Pesach. Then Taisus has the Machlokes with the other Rishonim. Will this reverse back again at the third stage in history or not? It's a little unclear in the Gemara. But that's the Lamaita, that's the Machlokes between the Chachmi Svarad and the Chachmi Ashkenaz. Whether the Chachmi Svarad hold that there were three stages in the Pesach. Originally the Pesach was Mitzvah Yibum Kodem, where it says in Chumash. And then later they reversed the Pesach like Abishol, and they said Mitzvah Chalitza Kodem, either Min HaTorah or the Rabbanan, or the Pshat and Abishol. He said that it's preferable to avoid doing Yibum, because who knows that who can testify to the fact that he's doing the Yibum with Shema. The Shem Mitzvah, he says, is religiously motivated. He's probably motivated for other reasons. Not religiously. Most people are not religiously motivated. He's not doing the Shema. And then there's a machlokes whether it was reversed the third time or not. So the Chachmi Svarad hold that it was reversed back. And the maskana that it is, we're back to where we started from on the level of the right, and the mitzvah is even kodemus. That's why the Sfardim still practice Yibum al hayom hazeh, that's how they come. And the Baalei HaTosfos, the Ashkenazim, the Chachmei Ashkenaz told me that there were only two stages in the history of the development of this halacha, and it stayed with the maskana that remained with the Abishol, that mitzvah chalitza kodemus and mitzvah even was preferable not to allow Yibum. In 1948, after Hakamat HaMdina, there was a problem. You're going to have a Rabbanus HaRoshis in Eretz Yisrael, So they always had two different rabbanim. So they had the Sfaradim and the Ashkenazim for the shechita purposes. So the Sfaradim are makpid on blood kosher, the Ashkenazim are not makpid on blood kosher. So the original rabbanut for years before the Hakamat HaMedina always had two divisions. One for the Sfaradim, one for the Ashkenazim, because the main function of the rabbanut was to give Kabbalah, the Shochan, to approve the Shochan. And they had different Shochanot, they had different ways of determining what's an acceptable shechita. But after the Hakamat HaMedina, they figured that in Inyani issues, the Rabbanut is going to be in charge of Inyani issues, and so they're going to control it. You have to have one united front. You can't have the Sfaradim going to go in their direction, the Ashkenazim are going to go in their direction. So they made a Hesgame, and they had all the Sfaradish Rabbanim at that time signed an agreement that they were all going to follow the Ashkenazi Psach, that they're not going to allow Yibam anymore. Everybody's going to do Chalitza. And then later, when Rabbi Radi Yosef became the chief rabbi and he published all of his monumental works, is Yabi Omer, so he published a big tshuva where he writes, what do you mean they made a Heskin? Made a Heskin, can I get a din? The Heskin is a law Heskin, can't make a Heskin. The din is that the Sfaradim do Yibum, they don't listen to any Heskin. Even though all of our bottom side, they didn't know what they were signing to. And the Sfaradim have to follow the Sfaradim and the Ashkenazim follow the Ashkenazim, and there's nothing wrong. We'll do Yibum and they'll do Chalitza, and everybody will be happy now. Anyway, Lemaisa, we do, the Ashkenazim do Chalitza. One of the Gedolim, the Maariv Kais, in the back of the Gemara Yevamos on Daf Lamed Tes on the base, comments. He quotes one of the Gedolim in Europe said that there was once a situation where a man died and he left no children. He was married, so his homona had to have either Yibum or Chalitza, and the brother wanted to do Yibum, and this was in Europe by the Ashkenazim, not by the Sfaradim. So the Rabbanim didn't allow him to do Yibum because we passed him that mitzvah Chalitza Kodemet. So he went to court and he wanted the government. He said that the rabbis are persecuting him and they don't allow him to observe his religion. He follows the Jewish religion, it says in the Torah. You have to do Yibum, not to do Chalitza. Chalitza is second best. He wants to do first best, he wants to do Yibum. And the rabbis don't allow him to. So they had a whole court case. So the rabbi explained that the man who died was not known to be such a Truma Tzaddik, that he used to go to prostitutes a lot. And he said that Halacha says in the Mishnah that if a man left a son or a grandson, even if it wasn't from his wife, even not from his wife, from a previous wife, even from a Zaina, as long as there was a child from a Jewish woman, if the man had went to non-Jewish prostitutes and he had children from her, so those children are not in Tiyat HaTakla, so they're not considered his children. So then when he dies, his wife, with whom he was married, will have to have Chalitza Yibum. Prostitutes won't need any Chalitza Yibum, but his wife, with whom he has issues, will have to have Chalitza Yibum. But if he left the child, even from a Zaina in Israel, as the Mishnah says, to know who the Kamakam, even Hazaina, so that would relieve the wife of having any need for Chalitza Yibum. So since the man who died was not known to be so drunk, and they knew that he was a Paritz Barai, so the rabbi said, we are afraid that maybe he has a child, Min Hazaina, and that's why we don't allow Yibum. So the topic we required after Chalitza. That wasn't the real reason. The real reason was because we pass in Mitzvah Chalitza Kodemet Mitzvah Yibum. But in that instance, that turned out to be also a valid reason. So one of the Gedolei Achronim says that it's a mitzvah lefarkin tamzeh. That is mahazah. We live in such a, this is a, they write 200 years ago. We live in a generation of a lot of pizzas, and we should be lefarkin this time. But that's a good explanation as to why we don't allow Yibum with mahazah. We do chalitza. What exactly is chalitza? Chalitza is a matir. By doing the chalitza, the woman is not permitted to remarry. Or do you say, no, it's something more than a matzah, chalitza is also a mitzvah. So the din requires, we don't say a bracha when we do chalitza. So that seems a little bit to indicate as if chalitza is not a mitzvah. So we're really a mitzvah, should we say a bracha maybe? Maybe yeah, maybe not. So the Tesis in the last parak in Nida points out, and that's Aynal on the basis, the Tesis points out that in chalitza, the Chumash has that there are three parts to the chalitza. You have to have Chalitza, she has to take off the shoe from his right foot, and then she has to spit in front of him on the floor, the earth of the front of on the floor, and then he has to say, recite certain sukkim, she has to recite certain sukkim, and so on. And everybody who's there says, Chalutza na, three times, after the whole ceremony is complete. There is a dispute among the Tanaim exactly how much of this is the kuvah, what's ma'akev. The one opinion is that everything is ma'akev. The kriya, with the Tzuktukim and the Chalitza and the Rukik, everything is Me'akev. Another Tana says no, that only the chalita sasandlos miyake, even the rikikas miyake, and the kriyas apsukim is not miyake. And we pass in even less than that, that only the chalita, only removing the shoes miyake, and if she didn't spit at all, and no one recited any of the psukim to be yet, she's in terror of being lost in our shoes. So you have a din l'chatchila, there's a din l'chatchila min atarit, it's not l'chatchila min atarit. It says in the Chumash that you're supposed to do A, B, and C, kriya, chalita, rikika, and the yevit only the chalita is miyake, and the kriya and the rikika is not miyake, not miyake. The Tosafot points out that on a level of the raisa to have a l'chatchila, that only makes sense if it's a mitzvah. So then you say the mitzvah b'shleibus, if you do it like so, then you have a mitzvah l'huderet. And if you did it less, so you yotze the mitzvah b'diyevet, and it's a shalom b'shleibus. But if it's only a matir, it's not a mitzvah at all, it's only a matir, so it doesn't make sense to say on a level of the raisa that the chatchila you have to have so much in b'diyevet, it's matir even if you did less. If it's matir if you did less, so do l'chatchila like that, if it's only a matir. So that itself is an indication that chalitza is a mitzvah. Tosafot speaks there about chalitza, that tevila in a mikveh. So he says, when you tevila in a mikveh, it doesn't make sense to say on a level of the raisa l'chatchila you have to do this, that, and the other thing. But he has it even good if you didn't do all of that. Tevila is not a mitzvah. Tevila is only a metahir. So if it's metahir, if you can get away with less, then why should you do l'chatchila more? If he's speaking about mitzvahs, the other thing, you want to do a mitzvah b'shleimus, do more. You want to do a mitzvah muhuderet, a mitzvah b'namufri, do more. If he did less, then you have to do a mitzvah shalo b'shleimus. But if it's only a matir, it can only make sense on a level of the rabbanon, let's say by a get. There are many dinim in Hilchos Gittin that l'chatchila you have to do it like so and like so, but yevet, if you did less, it'll also be a kosher get. But that can only be on a level of the rabbanon. You never have any l'chatchilas on a level of the right to buy a get. But by mitzvahs you have it all the time. The mitzvah b'shleimus is that you have chelus and lovan, but yeah, but if you only have the lovan like we have today, you say the mitzvah in an incomplete fashion. The chatchila you have to be zorik, and the carbon copper four groups and all four corners of the mitzvah. But yeah, if you zorik one, the Mishnah says that the carbon will be kosher. But it's a mitzvah shalev b'shleimus. And the chatchila is supposed to be marked with the chelav on the mitzvah. But yeah, but if you weren't marked with the chelav, you would just zorik the dam, the carbon will be acceptable. We have in the area of mitzvahs many times we have in chatzilus in the year. So Tosafot says explicitly that chalitza is a mitzvah, and they prove it from the fact that you have the chatzilus and the yevit on the level of the right. So the question is, you can still ask a question, is it a mitzvah for the woman to undergo chalitza only if she's interested in remarrying? They were married together for many years and had no children, and a woman and a man died at the age of 95. The lady is 91 years old, she's not interested in remarrying. She doesn't have any claims of remarriage. So do you say still it's a mitzvah to do chalitza whenever the husband died leaving no children? Or do you say no, the mitzvah to do chalitza, true, it's a mitzvah, it's not just a matir. It's a mitzvah, but maybe the mitzvah only applies if the woman is interested in remarrying, then it's a mitzvah. Not only a matir, then it's a mitzvah. So that's a great dispute in Achrayim. So several Achrayim quote this thesis in the end of Nida. Thesis said it's a mitzvah, so it means that it's a mitzvah. Even if you're not interested in remarriage. That's the way it's generally assumed, based on the Zohar. It's a mitzvah to do chalitza, even if the woman has no interest at all in remarrying.
Is the person
who
means
of
that a man
can have some sort of marriage? No, not really. No. The Pasuk says that the literal translation of the Pasuk sounds like it says that the first child that's born from the marriage, and the new marriage should be named after the dead man. So the Gemara says from the entire Chumash, we say that ain't a mikvah yetzim de pshut except for that pasuk. That pasuk does not pshut ushal mikvah. And it doesn't mean that at all.
Can you remember all the time when the first pasuk they didn't get any children from the first marriage?
Right. Right. So not only there were no children from that husband, means that this man never had any children. If he had children from a previous marriage, but then there's no even me. Let's say a man was married, then he had children and grandchildren, then his wife died, and then he remarried at the age of 65. He remarried. And then he married a woman who's also in her 60s, whatever, and they have no children. He has no children in the second marriage. But then if he doesn't need any, he doesn't. And then the husband died. But then the thing is that the wife doesn't have to have any chalitza later on. The husband had children. The children don't have to be from her. Let's say the woman was previously married and she has children and grandchildren, and she marries a man who's they're both in their 60s or 70s. She marries a man and then he dies leaving no children, but she had children from a previous marriage, so that doesn't help the fact that she had children. It all depends on whether the husband had children. If the husband had children from this marriage or from another marriage, and even if his children died, but he has grandchildren, if he has some descendants who are related to him, if the descendants are not Jewish, let's say he was born on Ochris and they have non-Jewish children, so that doesn't count. They're not related to him. They're not considered his children. But if he has any descendants who are Mitziach Esachar, who are Jewish, who are related to him, then the din is that there's no need for chalitza yibum. Let's say if they adopted children, or if the woman had artificial insemination from someone else's zera, then they're not his children. So then, even though they were raising children and grandchildren and everything, but it's not his children. So the din required the atar chalitza. If they had artificial insemination from the zera habal, if they took his zera and they implanted it inside the wife's body, that's a shayla and poskim. I never know them. Whether the children are mitziach is after the father, if they took his zera and they implanted it in the wife, that's a big machlokes.
Let's say she's not capable of having a child.
Yeah.
She's not capable of having a child.
That's usually the case. So then you need chalitza yibum. The only time you don't need chalitza yibum is if she, right, then you need
one.
Well, we don't allow yibum. We insist on chalitza. By the Ashkenazim, we insist on chalitza.
Let's say it has been
included. No. Either chalitza or yibum.
I would think she's not capable of having children, and after he dies, getting married to his brother.
Doesn't matter. The only thing is, the Gemara says it depends why is she incapable of having children. Or let's say the husband who died, someone obviously was not capable of having children. Obviously, he killed in the army. Right.
Well, her marrying his brother is not.
Doesn't matter. Unless she was an islandist. If the woman was an islandist doesn't mean an akora. That's two different things. If the woman was an islandist, or the man who died was a tourist, so then there's no din of chalitza yibum. But if the woman was not an islandist and he was not a tzoris, just that he was an akora, she was an akora, there was a hormone imbalance or something, and that's why they couldn't have any children, so then there is a din of the either chalitza yibum.
Say today, these days,
there's
a lot of parties in
we don't allow. Yeah. We don't allow. The only instance that we allow, I don't know, the Sfardim, some Sfardim still allow Yibum as Ma'azim. But the only instances that the Ashkenazim would allow Yibum is the situation where the woman is unable to do Chalitza. Let's say the Yavam's right leg is cut off. And he just can't do Chalitza. So you say the woman is stuck, she has to remain a Yavama. She has to remain in Aguda for the rest of her life. She's not allowed to get married. We don't allow her to do Yibum. And she can't do Chalitza because his leg is cut off. Well, let's say she's unable to speak. The Gemara says if the Yavam or the Yavama is a Cheresh Ein Medaber, a Cheresh Yadib HaChachamim B'chom B'Avon, when we speak of Cheresh HaChachachach and lumping them all together, that's a Cheresh Ein Shameh Ein Medaber. So we assume that he's a lav bar das. If he cannot speak and he cannot hear, we assume that he cannot be educated and he won't be intelligent enough to lead a normal life. Let's say he is intelligent, so then we assume that he is a bar das. But regarding chalitza, there's a separate din. A cheresh ein medaber, even if he's shameya, as long as ein medaber cannot do chalitza, because the din requires that he should have a kriyas apsukim and she should recite kriyas apsukim. He says, lecha fatzi lekachta. She says, mei yivam elohok lo hashem Yisrael. He says, lechafati lekachta, and so on. So since the Chumash speaks about people who are speaking, the other Yivama speaks, so the Gemara says that if they're incapable of speaking, they cannot do chalitza. Either din says that the Yezet, the Kriyas HaPsukim is not Miyakid, even the Rekika is sitting is not Miyakid. The only thing that's Miyakid is the chalitza. So we'll do it. So Shat HaPkach, you have no barriers to do the chalitza without the Kriyas HaPsukim. So the Gemara quotes the statement of Rabbi Zeira that when do you allow, when will you say the chalitza will be good even if they didn't read the psukim? That's only if they're roy, if they're able to read the psukim. What if it's ain't a roy with kriyas psukim, then the kriyas psukim is miyakev. If they're unable to recite the psukim, then it would be miyakev the other. So let's say that the yavam or the yavam are otherwise normal, healthy people, but just one of the two of them is unable to speak. So then they're unable to do chalitza. And if you don't allow them to do yibum, and they can't do chalitza, then she's going to be stuck for the rest of her life. So in such a rare instance, we would most of the achrayim would allow them to have yibum, and then to get divorced right away. They would allow them to have yibum, and then to get divorced right away. When you start the chalitza process, the din is that the chalitza has to be done in the presence of the bezin. It says, well, see, this is the hashara le'enei hazikainim. Hazikainim is a machlekes satanan, whether how you darshan of psukim, you need a bezin of three or a bezin of five. Machlekes of Yudah, Reb Shimon, and Perek Mitzvah Chalitza. There's one little Perek in Yivamah that starts around that Kuf, that Tzadik Tes or so. It's just around the 8th blood Gemara, 7-8 blood Gemara. It has all the din of Chalitza. It's very fascinating. Hilchos Chalitza are very interesting. Even if it happened, even if you never saw Chalitza, you saw Chalitza, then it's even more fascinating. But the Perek is a self-contained Perek, very interesting. So the Gemara there, at the very beginning of the Perek, presents the Machlekes of Yudah Reb Shimon, whether the Bezna for Chalitza requires a Bezna 3 or Bezna 5. The Gemara Paschus Halacha Maaseh 3, but the Chatzchila we have 5. So we always have the Bezna, they have 3 sitting in one direction, then you have the other two are called Nosaf, and they sit in an opposite direction at a right angle to the first 3 to demonstrate that these are the 3 main Dayanim, they're the real members of the Bezna, and the other two are just Latirsim. Who says that needed Pirsum? Why is there a requirement of Pirsum? So this is based on the Pasuk also even to Hashara. The Yena has came Hashara means that they should go to a public place where the Bezin will be. So the din in the Chumash requires, which is very common from that Pasuk also even to Hashara that you need Pirsum. That's why the Shulchan Aruch says that the minig is that you do Chalitz in Shul right after Shachris. So everybody should remain in shul, so you'll have as much piercing as you can have. It's not right to do chalitza in a private place. Why do you do dafke after shachris? Don't you do after ma'ariv? Because whenever you need a bezin, it has to be done by yom. The Mishnah says to do chalitza b'alayla. It's not good. There's no yeshiva's bezin b'alayla. Why don't you do the chalitza in the afternoon? Because no one's around. Let's say come to the base medrash. Let's say have a yeshiva, thousands of people yeshiva university, thousands of students studying Torah Mada all day long. So can you do the chalitza in the afternoon? So it says in the Shulchan Aruch, the chatzchila is supposed to do the chalitza before she ate breakfast, before she ate anything, because we require rikike. The Gemara says the rikike should be done, she has to form the saliva meyatzma from her own body. If she had, let's say, some spicy food for breakfast, which caused her to salivate, and then the saliva just comes out because of that food that she had, some spicy food, then the Gemara says it wouldn't be good for a rikike. So even though the whole rikike is not miyake, and even though most people don't have onions or whatever for breakfast, you're going to have a cup of coffee and a Danish for breakfast, but still that's the meaning that we tell her that she shouldn't eat until she does the chalitza. So that's why we always have the chalitza in the morning, after shachris. Instead of having it in the afternoon, in the base medrash, you have it in the morning, because the woman is fasting. The din is that you have to have kviyas makayim. The Gemara has this. You have to have kviyas makayim the day before the bezin does chalitza. Unless we're going to do chalitza in this room. This room is not where we daven the shachris. No, the proper thing is, to have chalitza. Well, let's say we're going to daven in the morning. We're going to come right after davening. We're all going to have breakfast and we're going to come here at 9 o'clock. It's the yavam that you shouldn't eat. Okay, the yavam, strictly speaking, he can eat because he doesn't have to do any spinning. But we always recommend that nobody should eat before they do a mitzvah. You're not supposed to eat before you shake a lulav. You're not supposed to eat before you listen to Tia Shafer. It's not proper to eat before you do a bris milah in the sun, or some hall before you do pidyon haben. Well, we have to eat before he says bris milah. The mitzvah only says in after having eaten.
But even how you settle down, you just not.
Nikir adin ta'ima is permissible before you do a mitzvah, but most people are machmir on that not to do ta'ima either. Some poskim say, some rishonim say that that's the reason why the chasim call it a fast on the day that they get married, because when they get married they're going to do a mitzvah of getting married, and you're supposed to fast before you're not supposed to eat before you do the mitzvah that's incumbent upon you to do. The Rekiah, I think, writes like that.
What if the lady wants to eat before she does?
Right, so that's what we tell her not to. We tell her going to have the chalitza as early as possible in the month. Unless she's an old sick lady, she's going to fall apart, she's going to collapse, and then we can tell her it's okay to have a little pot. But otherwise the meaning is that she doesn't eat anything. So the din is that the day before, let's say we plan to have the chalitza here on Wednesday morning, 9 o'clock, so the din requires that the day before, on Tuesday, so the day afternoon, the 5 people should convene here, and they should sit, they should arrange their chairs, 3 chairs this way and 2 chairs this way, where they're going to sit, and they make a declaration. Tomorrow we're going to come here and have a bezin for the purpose of chalitza. That's called kviyas makom. So you make a kviyas makom in advance, the day before you're going to have the chalitza. What's the purpose of the kviyas makom? So in the Shulchan Aruch they say that that's also an aspect of pirsum. But it says in the Chumash also even the Hashara that you require pirsum, that's a requirement in HaTorah. So if the bezin convenes a day in advance, so this adds a little pirsum. It says in the Shulchan Aruch, what if the chalitza is going to take place on Sunday morning? Are you permitted to have the kviyas makom on Shabbos? It says it's not allowed. The Rishonim say it's not allowed. They give 3 different reasons in the Shulchan Aruch why. Very strange. Some say it's hachana, the parsha is making, the Shabbos hachana. You're setting up the chairs in order to have the chalitza tomorrow, so that's an act of hachana. What if you have setting up the chairs? What if the chairs are there? They just say, we're going to sit here tomorrow and do a chalitza. It's also hachana. Just to say we're going to do chalitza. So some say, no, It's a violation of Ein Donim. Since you need a bezin for chalitza, the bezin is supposed to convene the day before to do the chalitza, to say that tomorrow they do the chalitza, so that's also a violation of Ein Donim to Shabbos. Bezin is not allowed to function on Shabbos because it's Gzeir Shaniyah. Another achrayim say that the reason why we don't allow the kriyas makom on Shabbos is because it's a malachim of the rabbanim abona. The kriyas makom, you kavei makom, like you built a makom. It's a little humorous. That's the Sin Shulchan Aruch. We give the three reasons why it's forbidden. Well, the ma'aseh, they don't do a kriyas. So if the chalitza is going to take place Sunday morning, they make the kriyas makom on Friday. 2 days in advance instead of 1 day in advance. When you do the chalitza, you have to have the five dayanim, the three sitting this way and the two sitting that way, and then you have also in addition two eidim who are standing. That's the minute. We mentioned Rabbi Kivig says he doesn't understand why do you need two eidim in addition to the five? Why can't any two out of the five serve as the eidim? Well, I'm often that the guy can't serve as two roles.
In that case, he needed really five. There's nobody extra.
So what do you need extra? We thought you only need three. Not just in case. I'm often that the stock is you only need three. The additional two are just the Pearson. Even if you need five, so what? So you have five, so who says that the Adam have to be extra? He says, let the Dayanim serve as the Adam. Where does it say that the same people can serve in two different roles? Makatusham. Ain't Adam not to die in, Sir Rabbi Kivega says. And if you last me, that the Gemara says in Sanhedrin. So he says that
that's. He's only saying that only
for the Nefashis. Because of Haftorah, right. So that case that you... Right, so that's a special case, would not pose a problem. But he's quoting another Gemara, which is not limited to Afki Fidim Nefashis. Rabbi Kivega says, I will throw me the Gemara in Sanhedrin that says, Ein, Ein, Nasa Dayan. That one who serves as an Ein can't turn around and serve as a Dayan. So he says, no, that only applies when he's an Ein HaMeid. But if it's only Ein HaRoeh, then Tzitzit says that this does not apply. They said, be aided by Chalitza, not aided by me. They're just watching. They didn't testify in front of anybody. They just watched. And by watching alone, they're Mekayim. Sakedis Mekim Adoba by Kiddushin. They just stand there. They don't testify. So that's what Tali doesn't understand. But that's the minute. Instead of Shulchan Aruch, that's the minute. You have five Dayanim sitting. You have two Eidim standing, separate from the Dayanim. And then you have the ceremony beginning. So the Bezin first has to ascertain that you have to have first Hakara. According to you have to ascertain that this is the Yavam and this is the Yavama. You have to ascertain that the Yavam is Bar Mitzvah. We'll say Neandai. And he left a brother who's very young. So how do you know that he's Bar Mitzvah? You have to have, it's not sufficient that he already celebrated his Bar Mitzvah. Just because we know that he's 13 years old doesn't make him Bar Mitzvah. You have to have Shana Bissimon. You have to know that he has Shtei Sairus on the Eloh Erbo. With respect to a Din Deraisa, we don't rely on the Chazokia that the Gemara says. There is a Ruba the way to come on a Chazokah, the Gemara says in Libya that whoever is 13 probably has Shtei Sairus already. We only rely on that Chazokah with respect to Dina Zerabonim. We'll allow the kid to daven for an omen. We'll allow him to learn Kriyas HaChaira. But not to be an aid on a get and not to do Chalitza. This is a Dina Natera that to do Chalitza, the Yavam has to be Bar Mitzvah. But you have to have somebody who will ascertain. Let's say he's an older man, let's say the brother's an older man, he's married, he has children and grandchildren already. If the brother is, then we know he's Bar Mitzvah, you know, to start being Bayek to see the Ashley Sires, you know. Or let's say he's single, but he's past 35. So past 35, for sure he's Bar Mitzvah. You don't have to ask any question. How do you know he's past 35? You look at him. If he looks like he's an old man with long white hair, so obviously he's past 35, you don't have to ask any question. The Yvonne also has to be Bar Mitzvah. So if she looks like she's over 12 years old, doesn't necessarily mean that she's a Zayla. Maybe she doesn't have Ashley Sires. She doesn't have Shtei Sairus, so she can't do the Chalitza. You have to wait until she grows Shtei Sairus. But again, if it's very clear that she's over 35 years old, if she already had children, so what she had in Chalitza for? So quickly she had children from a previous. If you have children, that's a simon that you're Bar Mitzvah already. The Gemara says, Banim Kisimon. If she had children from a previous marriage, and then she married this guy, and he's a single guy, he died, and he never had any children, so she still needs Chalitza. But we know that she's a Gedayla, because she had children from a previous marriage, so Banim Kisimon. But let's say she never had any children, but she looks clearly that she's over 35, so then the Gemara is over 35, is honorary Bar Mitzvah. Over 35 is a Gil, the Rav Shneitzot. But he says, Yimeshin and Sena Bahem Shiv Mishana. A person lives on the average 70 years. So if it's a Gil, the Rav Shneitzot, he's already past 35. And even if he doesn't have Shtei Sairus, we declare him anyway Bar Mitzvah and Bas Mitzvah. So if the man, the Yavama, the Yavama, past 35, you don't have to ask any questions. if we're not sure that they pass 35, then we have to ascertain somehow that the Yavam is a bar mitzvah, he's a gadol, and that the Yavam is a gadol.
Yeah. If she was 12 and she wasn't a kiddush, she was a
gadol,
so what's the
kiddush of her? It will probably be a kiddush in the Rabbanon. Sometimes it will be a kiddush in the right. If the father married her off, which we don't normally do, as far as they still do it. Right? So then it will be a kiddush in the right. If the father is not alive and the mother or the brother marry her off, then it will be a kiddush in the Rabbanon. So she still need the.
It's 35,
and it's Machlek is the Rambam and the Rabbah of what day? 30 days after the 35th first day, or one day after? There are a lot of details. How to figure out whether the person is off, he's in considered 35, not some on average.
So 30, the guy has a beard, he's 30 years old.
No, if he has a beard, that's also a simon. If his hair grows over here, that means the hair's growing over there too. The Gemara in the Shulchan Aruch to give you how to know that a person is bar mitzvah without checking the actual Eivah Ha'era. When you start the Chalitza, so you have to have Hakara. First you have to know that the Yovam and the Yivam are Gedolim. So that's usually not so difficult sometimes, isn't it? You have to ascertain that. And then you have to ascertain that this is the brother of the Nifter from the father, that he's either a half-brother or a whole brother, but from the father's side, if he's a half-brother from the mother's side, and he's not eligible to do Chalitza. Chalitza is only Achim and Ha'ov, and Achim and Ha'im doesn't Lo Malo Lo Morit. And this Hakorah, the Gemara says, cannot be based on what they themselves say. He'll come and he'll say, I am the brother from the father's side. That's not good. You have to have that Hakorah from an outsider. And the Gemara has a Machlekes, do you require Hakorah in Pishnayim, Hakorah in Pi'edech? So we pass in even Ha'edech, that is sufficient. Hakorah in Pi'edech. Even if it's a woman or even if it's a relative who will give the Hakara, that will also be accepted. So when you have the Hakara, so the Bezin is,
Why do we need two? The bottom line of this whole thing is to see if he's the brother.
Maybe this is the man that the Yavama wants to marry. Maybe this is her boyfriend. And he'll come and he'll say, yeah, I'm the brother of the dead man, I'm going to do the Chalitza. And then the Bezin will give her a document that she did the Chalitza.
No, I'm saying if we have one guy from the outside, it should be enough. Because someone else says
you
should have two guys.
Makwek is thinking whether one or two.
But I'm having two from
the outside. Zakadova should be Erevah. So you need to have two witnesses. Mm-hmm. So we'd pass to the Gemara, passing the Afilu Eidach, but Afilu Yisha, Afilu Koro. Usually you have the rabbis in the community who knows that. He says, I know that they're brothers, that they have the same father. So that's good for the Hakor. Then the Bezin asked him, do you prefer to do Yigum Machalit? Because he has to say, Loicha Fasti Lakata, I decided not to do Yigum. So you have to give him the options. Do you want to do Yigum Machalit? We're going to break his head if he says he wants to do Yigum. Because we don't allow Yigum by the Ashkenazim. Well, we have to follow what it says in the Chumash. We say, would you prefer to do Yigum? Or do you want to do Chalit? What if the brother is married? The living brother is married. He can't do Yigum. Can't be nice to Isha Alishta, I can't marry another wife. So we are not the Chayim de Rabbeinu Gershom. We say, even though you're married, we give you special dispensation. You can do Yigum if you want to. And then heaven help him if he chooses to. We're not going to let him. We allow you to do Yigum in order that he should be able to say, yeah, I thought it over and I decided not to do Yigum. The question is, what if you have two brothers? This is a common shaila. What if there were three brothers and one died, and then the two remaining brothers, the older brother is married, and the younger brother is single, so if the older brother is going to do the chalitza, you'll have to be matar the chayim de Rabbeinu Gershom first, in order that he should be able to stay with a straight face. I chose, out of my own free will, not to do yibum. If the younger brother will do the chalitza, you won't have to be matar any chayim de Rabbeinu Gershom. But the Mishnah says it's a mitzvah begodol yabim. We learned from that post of Vahayak Parsha Telei. That's the one pasuk in Kol HaTorah Kulo from the whole Chumash that is Amikra Yetzim Dei Pshuto, that you don't read the pasuk the way it reads simply, you don't interpret it the way it reads simply. The only pshat in that pasuk is the Drashas Chachamim. So what is the Drashas Chachamim? Hayapkor mitzvah begodol yabim. That it's the mitzvah on the oldest brother to do Yibum. And the Gemara comments on that Mishnah. Not only is that true regarding Yibum, it's even true regarding Chalitza. If the man died and he left several brothers alive, so it's preferable that the oldest brother should do the Chalitza. So here you have a conflict. On the one hand, it's preferable that the older brother should do the chalitza, but if he'll do the chalitza, you have to be matzah b'chem the Rabbeinu Gershom him. On the other hand, if the younger brother will do the chalitza, he won't have to be matir any chayim the rabbinic gerushin, but he will be missing the mitzvah of the brother. Yeah, that's the question. So the Beis Shmuel and Ibn Ezra, that's the standard commentary on the side of the Shulchan Aruch Ibn Ezra. The Beis Shmuel writes that you let the younger brother, in that case, you tell the younger brother to do the chalitza rather than have the older brother. What do you have to be matir chayim the rabbinic gerushin on this itself? And the other days, and Chelik Ibn Ezra, where somebody, oh, Rav, they ask him a shayla, what should I do? He was told that he had that shayla. So the two brothers, and the older brother was married, and the younger brother was female, the common shayla. But the younger brother was after bar mitzvah. The younger brother was before bar mitzvah. So you don't say, let's avoid being matzah, the chemda ben Gershon, wait a couple of years, or wait a couple of weeks till the kid is going to be bar mitzvah. So the woman wants to chalitza now. She doesn't want to wait. So then you certainly have your matzah, the chemda ben Gershon, how the older brother do the chalitza. But here the shayla is you can have either the older brother by Matar Chemda Rabbeinu Geshem or the younger. But the one who asked the shayla to the Yavnei Nezer, right, he looked in the Beis Shmuel. The Beis Shmuel says that the younger brother should do it. He wants to know what's the din. But Yavnei Nezer says, what's the din? The Beis Shmuel says that the younger brother does. What's the shayla? What kind of stupid shayla is that? But he says, no, he did the right thing. Even if it says the favorish in the Shulchan Aruch, he should still ask the shayla. He shouldn't really pass it from the Shulchan Aruch. Even if it says black and white, he should ask someone else. And come to think of it, he looked it up in the original sources and he found the Ritva contradicts the Beis Shmuel. There's a Ritva in Gemara Yevamah that's contradicting the Beis Shmuel. There's a whole dissertation, a whole essay explaining what the issue hinges on, whether the Beis Shmuel is right or the Beis Shmuel is wrong, and after 2.5 pages comes to the conclusion the Beis Shmuel is right. But he did pass like the Beis Shmuel. Very interesting truth. All of the truths are very interesting. But then somehow there must have been some kind of an issue. There's some kind of a tichsuch about this. So the Rav, to whom he sent the tshuva, sent him back another letter, which is not available in print, not in the Yavnei Nezer. So he had to send it back a second tshuva, but he writes again the same thing. I paskin that you follow the Mishmuel, and you have the younger brother do the chalitza rather than have the older brother, and the matter of chenu abenigesh. And then he says, in order that this letter shouldn't be just an empty letter that doesn't have any chiddush in it, he's going to write an added chiddush. So he writes, he's always interesting tradition, so he writes, and when you should keep in mind, when we matter the chayav de Rabbeinu Gershon for the purpose of doing chalitza, it doesn't mean he can really marry the woman. It's only when matter it with respect to him being able to do the chalitza, but he's not allowed to marry the woman. And he quotes the Knesset Agbela has two opinions on this, and he gives you a hashra, he gives you a comparison to a Gemara in Erevin. Sometimes we say we're matter and Issa, it doesn't really mean we're matter the Issa. It means we're matter the Issa with respect to A, B, and C. So not that you can really violate the Issa. That's what it means over here. You mean those who don't observe the Chem, they don't follow the Chem that have been today, some of those things probably don't follow the Chemda Rabbein Gershon either. It means that they'll marry two wives. They'll let them marry two wives. Yosef Karo had a son who died without any children. He had a few sons. The one son died without any children. That son was married to Rav Chaim Vital's sister. Her name was Simcha Vital. Simcha was a girl's name. So he married to Simcha Vital. And Rabbi Yosef Karo's son, who was alive, wanted to do Yibum, but he had another wife. But they didn't follow the Chemda Rabbeinu Gershon. So he wanted to do Yibum. They didn't follow the 1948 Hesker, the 1500s, they didn't follow that. So he was going to do Yibum, even though he had another wife. So the girl's father, Simcha's father, told her that she shouldn't have any Yibum. He didn't want his daughter to be a second wife. He wanted his daughter to have a happy life with one, with a husband who would prevent any competition from another one. He told his daughter she should hold out there and insist that she wants to leave. And Rabbi Yosef Karo's son only wanted to do him, so there was a big fight going on. So this was a whole course of leper in the 1670s or so. They had different shuvahs written about this. Big machlekes, the Beis Din Yerushalayim with the Beis Din Tzfat, and then they didn't listen, they did listen, I got some answers. Yes, a chunk of history.
So if you're saying you don't have to go back and kind of
let them
careful, you can meet other people now.
You can do what?
You can meet other people now.
Who says you have to follow the Chemda Rabbeinu Gershon? Of course you do. The Chemda Rabbeinu Gershon, reading mail, that was an insult they write before the Rabbeinu Gershon made it. You're not allowed to violate someone else's privacy. The Rabbeinu Gershon just added on a Chemda. Chemda means a curse, and whoever violates that insult they write, they should drop dead. apparently the currency should drop there. It ended up in a condition not to marry two wives is only made initially through the year 1240, for the year 5000 in the Jewish calendar, which corresponds to the year 1240. After the year 1240, his chayim was up. So the Ashkenazim continued to observe it. And the Spartan, the Yitzhakar, the Machaber writes in Shulchan Aruch, that the Spartan don't observe it anymore. After the year 1240, they don't continue to observe it. Up until then, they did observe it.
Why do we observe it?
In our parts of the world, the goyim also only married one wife, and that was against polygamy. So in our parts of the world, we decided it's a good thing.
So we shouldn't go.
No, sometimes when they go and have nice ideas, we follow them. When they have bad ideas, then we don't follow them. We're not supposed to follow them. The Jews usually do the very thing. They pick up all the bad practices in the Goyim. But to follow what the Goyim do, that's okay. That's good. That's what Torah Mat is supposed to be all about. It's supposed to pick up in a Chokhmah Sagoyim, Chokhmah, not Shtuyot. The question is, what if the woman, what if the almana, never heard of this din? Husband died. So she thought the husband died. So you go and you get married. So she goes and she gets married. She didn't know she has to have chalit. But she's now an Asian sitch. And then on a fine day, they wake up and they're supposed to have chalit. So can they do chalit the way it is right now? They tell the yavon, would you prefer to do even machalit? He says, I prefer to do chalitza. What do you mean, what do you prefer? She's an Eishes Ish. He has no choice. She can't do anything. So the Gemara has a question about that. What is the Kiddushin Chal? The Pasuk says, Loisiyya Eishes Hameit Akutza Liishzar. Loisiyya. Ma HaKavana Loisiyya. So the Gemara has one interpretation, Loisiyya Bo Havaya, that Kiddushin are not toxin. But the Kiddushin are not toxin. She's not an Eishes Ish. The Kiddushin was not Chal. But the Gemara has a machlokes, Rabbi Shmuel about that, and we pass him halacha that it's a sveikah d'dina. Yes, no, maybe. Three shittas, and we pass him maybe. That it's a sveikah d'dina where the kiddush and atavosim be yivam al hashuk. So maybe yes, maybe no. So maybe the woman is an eshes tish. That's the question. If the woman, the chumra, that's the pesach in the Gemara. The Gemara says ba'ani yuseinu because of our aniyus datenu that we cannot be machriya. So we pass him halacha that it's a suffix. Whether the kiddush and atavosim be yivam al hashuk. Or not. So the question is, if the kiddushin on the tzad, if the kiddushin made me toxin, yivam al hashur, so how can you allow the yavam to do chalitza now? He cannot say, lo chafatzi lekachta, I decided not to do yivam. Because he's married, if the yavam is married, in order to enable him to say with a straight face, lo chafatzi lekachta, we have to lift the chem, the rabbeinu gershom, that he should be able to say. I thought it over and I decided not to do yibum. How can he think it over if he's on the chemda rabbeinu gershom? So we're not on the chemda rabbeinu gershom. So if the woman is an eishes ish, because the woman went ahead and married, can I get that in? She did not. She went and she married somebody. So there's no heter on that. It can't be matam and isav eishes ish. So how can you have the yavam do chalitza when the woman is married already? So the Levush, in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, says that's right. If the Yivama went ahead and married, you have to have the husband give her a get first, and then you can do the chalitza. Before this new husband gives her a get, maybe she's married to him, maybe she's not, before he gives her the get, we wouldn't allow the Yivama to do chalitza, because how can he say, he thought it over and he decided that he doesn't want to do Yeah, that's a question, is that really so? And the Ikar Adin, we assume it's not really so. We assume that he can do chalitza even if the woman isn't eshes. If you can get him to give a get, you have him give a get first, and then you do the chalitza. And if not, most of the cases is going to be not. Most of the time, you're dealing with people who are not observant. If you're dealing with religious people, so the guy wouldn't have married the woman in the first place. He would have read a yes to the rabbi, he would find out that there's a din of Yivam al Ashuf, not to marry the woman before getting chalitza. If you're dealing with the people, it's a difficulty. So you don't say, well, since we can't have the husband divorce his wife, so there's no use in doing chalitza at all because the chalitza won't be chal. No, Nikar Adin, we don't pass him like the Levush. Nikar Adin, we pass him that he can do chalitza even though the woman is married. Aye, how can they say lechafatzi lechaf? That's an ishta. So you won't say lechafatzi lechaf. Shani Nezer writes, what if you have a situation, the Gemara has certain cases where the woman cannot have yibum. She's the chagulav v'yester. Certain cases in the Gemara that you have to have chalitza even they can't have yibum. And there's no way that he can have yibum. It's absolutely forbidden to have yibum. So how does it say lechafatzi lekafta? So he says, so he won't say lechafatzi lekafta. So you leave out the kriyas up the first pasuk. You leave out lechafatzi lekafta. You leave out me'ayin yibam lechafim lechafim shem v'yisrael lo avoyav me. You leave that out and you leave out that he does. first they have, he says he doesn't want to do Yibum, and then she says he doesn't want to do Yibum, and then you do the Chalitza. And afterwards you say, Kafa Yosel Esh Shel Yibum is based off. So that part of the Kriya you can have. But that part you probably also can't have. This is what we're going to do to the man who refused to do Yibum. You probably have to leave that out also. So you delete the whole Kriya Sapsu. So you won't do Kriya Sapsu. You won't do the Kriya Sapsu. L'chatzchila, the Seder HaDvarim is, you have to have Kriyas Psukim, and then you have the Chalitza, and then you have the Rikike, and then you have again the Kriyas HaPsukim, you say, Kachi Yosu Lishu Shalim, and say Sachim, and then all of the people over there say, three times, Chalutanah, Chalutanah, Chalutanah. What if you did it Shalai Al HaSeder? So the Gemara says the Seder is not Miyakiv. What if the Seder is not Miyakiv? First she did the Rikike, and then she did the Chalitza, so she's not required to repeat the Rikike. Even though you want to do everything with Minam, of course, it's not necessary to repeat the Rikika over again. She already did the Rikika. What if they did the Kriya Tapsukim, Shalom Allah Seder? Let's say, usually they have a Seder Chalitza. The Dayanim have a Seder Chalitza. They have an old book that's falling apart, the pages are falling apart. So one of the pages fell apart. My Shashai happens every so often. Pages fell apart and they got mixed up. So the Dayanim didn't realize, so they started writing. Let's say by mistake they recited Kocha Yosalish. The left page was printed first. They had it first. They had her say Kocha Yosalish Shalim in the space office. They already said that passage before they began the whole Chalitza ceremony. So they say the Seder is not Miyakiv. So even after they finished the Chalitza, there's no need to repeat Kocha Yosalish. Because the Seder Adram is not Miyakiv, but he had it since he already said it. You would say, or not. So the Abnezer says, no, that doesn't make sense. The Seder is not Miyakiv, only refers to the Kriya versus the Chalitza. That first she does Chalitza, she takes off the shoe, and then you do the Rikika, you do the spitting on the floor. If you do the Rikika before the Chalitza, b'diyavid, it's good. But about the Kriya Tzukim, he says, that doesn't make any sense. If you said Kachi Yosalish before she did the Chalitza, that doesn't fit in. If you say Kachi Yosalish in between the Chalitza and the Rikika, b'diyavid, it will be good. You really supposed to say Kachi Yosalish after the Rikika, after everything is over. So b'yeved, you'll have first chalitza, she'll take off the shoe, and then they'll say kafi yasalish, and then you'll do the rikike, so then there won't be any need to repeat, of course the Rambam says that, then there won't be any need to repeat the kriya of kafi yasalish after the rikike. But if it is from the Rambam, what if by mistake they recited kafi yasalish before they even began? What if this is what we do for the people, they didn't do anything yet, so then he insists that you'll have to repeat again kafi yasalish at the end. Well, let's say they forgot to say Me'en Yivam L'Hachem Shem B'Yisrael L'Yava. Yadmin, he forgot to say L'Chafatzi L'Kachta before they began the Chalitza, and then they did the whole Chalitza. So then Abdenezer passes L'Hachem like Rashi, he quotes the Ramah. This is a Gemara of all places, it's in Sanhedrin. This Gemara, this crucial Gemara does not appear in Yivam's. This Gemara appears in Sanhedrin, the first daf in Perakarbanis. You got no Ganshas to know any given shah, you have to know Kala Tariqa. So he shows that Gemara, he says, look at the Gemara, the Machlok is Rashi in the Adama. So he says, Paschus Allah, that if they already did the Chalitza, and they hadn't recited in advance, Lecha, Patsu, Bekach, the Me'en Yivam, he says, you won't accomplish anything by saying it then. It's too late. That's only to be recited as the introduction to the whole Seder Chalitza.
So the Tata Yasevani,
you
can say
it before,
this is what
we're going to do.
The following of what happens to a person.
And he says not so, right? He shows from the Rambam that it's not so. But that he says it doesn't make sense. You have to say Kochi Yosalish Dafke afterwards. The Rambam writes also that after the whole Chalitza ceremony is completed, she takes off the shoe from his foot and then she throws it away. That doesn't say anywhere anymore about throwing away. The only source for that is the Zohar. So there's a whole literature on this. Obviously the Rambam was reading Zohar. Privately, he never quotes the Zohar. He must have been reading the Zohar. He must have been reading somebody who quoted the Zohar. Otherwise, where did he get this from? Where did he get it from? That was the practice. That was the meaning, the way he saw the Chalitza. But usually the Rambam only writes things that appear in the Gemara or the sources. There's no other source other than the Zohar.
No, he was interpreted later.
The Rambam, yeah. Could be. You have to check. You have to check in the original sources. The Gemara says that when you do a chalitza, the woman is not permitted to hinasi vashur, but that's only provided if niskavin hu bin niskavnahi, that they both had kavana, the yovan and the yavama. Let's say the yavama is a saleswoman in a shoe shop. She's selling shoes, and the yavama comes in, she puts on a shoe, and she takes it off. And she has kavana by her putting on the shoe and taking it off, that she's going to be mataris vashur. And he doesn't have kavana. His kavana is to buy pair of shoes. He doesn't have anything in mind. So then the Gemara says it's not good. You have to have Achi is kavana. Achi is kavana. They both have to have kavana. They have to have kavana for what? What do they have to have kavana for? So the Chacham Tzvi has the first tshuva in the Sefer. Tshuva Aleph raises the question on this. Is it mitzvah tzichas kavana? You have to have kavana l'shem mitzvah. And once you have kavana l'shem mitzvah, then you yoytze the mitzvah. And then the letter, since he entered the mitzvah, she's materis lehinas l'ashuk. And he said, no, it's like kavana's kinyin. It's a kavana type of l'ashuk. It has nothing to do with kavana to do a mitzvah. But if they don't believe, in the Holy Spirit, they don't believe in God, the kavana l'shem mitzvah is not going to work. But whether they believe it or don't believe, the rabbis say, we will not marry you, we will not let you marry her mother, her grandmother, her uncle, whatever, they won't let her marry until she has the chalitza. So she says, I'm taking off the shoe in order to be able to remarry. But I don't believe in the whole religion at all. She's taking off the shoe in order to remarry. So is it kavanas hetel ashuv, or is it kavanas mitzvah? That's the pilful that the first tshuva and the Chacham Tzvi discussed. So the minig is that the rabbanim always tell the yavam and the yavam, they should have both kavanas. Have kavana that is l'shem mitzvah, have kavana that is l'shem hetel ashuv.
No decision,
just both. Yeah. The Mishnah says that you have to do chalitza b'yamin. It has to be done with the right side of the body. The question is, what do you mean b'yamin? And if you do chalitza b'smallest psula afilu b'yamin, what does that mean? She has to do the chalitza with her right hand. She shouldn't do the chalitza with her left hand. She does chalitza with the left hand as possible. That's Mishnah that appears in Perek Mitzvah Chalitza and Yivama is places in Chula, the first Perek Mitzvah Chalitza, I think. But now places interprets that that's what it means. The Chalitza is done with the left hand as possible afilu b'yamin. So that's really, normally when you take off the shoelace, so you untie the shoelace with both hands, no? So you have to tell a woman, make sure you only untie the shoelace with the shoe straps, not with your right hand. It's very hard. The natural thing, the natural instinct is to untie with both hands. So the process always is, you tell a woman she should stand up, and it says, this is the yonki, no? You got the pasuk, it says Bamida, she's supposed to stand up.
Now it's not even stand up.
Yeah, and then what does it say? It says another pasuk get that, it says the yonki. So the Hatsila, we do it by Midan, but the Yevit, if you do the Yeshiva, is good. So she stands up, and then the Bezin tells her she should put the left hand behind the back, and only do the untying with the right hand. Yeah, and Mikir Adin, we don't really task it like that, because it's for the Yevit. The Hatsila, she should do the untying with the right hand, but the Yevit, she should do it with the left hand, it will be good. But the Mishnah says, Chalitza, the small, there's no good things on the left foot. She has to remove the shoe from his right foot. If she removes the shoe from his left foot, that's no good. So the question is, how do you determine what's the right foot and what's the left foot? So there are different opinions. One sheet is the right foot is the right foot, one is in the left. The other sheet is no. Which is the stronger foot? Just like Yemin and small by tefillin, so which is the stronger foot? So you have to ask the guy, you put a football in front of him, and he asks him, please kick the ball. So you see, which foot would he naturally use to kick the ball? Whichever foot he'll kick with will probably be the stronger foot. Or you ask him, stand up. And yes, can start to walk. That's what they usually do. They don't take a football by the chalitza. They usually tell them to stand up and start walking. So usually a person will walk with the foot that's strongest first. Unless he went to the army and they trained him to walk left, right, left, right. So then he's going to walk with left foot first, even if the right foot is strong. So that's a big problem. When he instituted the left, right, left, right, the poskim said that this created big problems. They have difficulties determining. Well, it's hard for the guy. A lot of times it's hard. A person normally knows whether he's a righty or a lefty. That he does all the time. And if he's a football player, he'll also know whether he's a righty or a lefty. But if he's not a football player, it's usually hard to determine. You usually don't think about it, whether you're right footed or you're left footed. I don't know. I don't know.
You're on the
So that's a machlekes. How do you what does it mean, chalitza b'yamin? Chalitza b'yamin means the right foot. The right foot is the right foot. And this is crucial, because if you do chalitza with the left foot, it's possible to be yamin. The shaila is whether right means the right foot, or the right means yamin b'koach, the stronger foot. So what do you do? Halacha ma'aseh, what do you do? So if the husband happens to be a left-footed man, means his left foot is stronger than the right foot, then we will insist that she should do chalitza twice. You put the shoe on one foot, then you put the shoe on the other foot. The only question is, which foot do you put it on first? This is not some question of how you arrange the state of Adram. This is crucial already. If there is a din of chalitza psuma, sricha lachzor al kol ha'achin. So, chizur. Normally, when you do chalitza, all you need is that one of the living brothers should do the chalitza. Let's say a man dies and he leaves many brothers. Only one brother has to do chalitza. You don't require that all of the living brothers should do chalitza. Once one brother does chalitza, so the Yivam was mutaris lehinasu lashuv. Unless that chalitza was a chalitza psula. If it was a chalitza psula, then it's a chumra midrabban. It's not a din minhatar. Then tzricha lachzor al kol ha'achim. That's what the achronim call chizur. Chizur means when she has to go schlep to get chalitza from each and every living brother. If the husband died and there's only one surviving brother, and the brother is a left-footed man, so we require that he should do chalitza twice, once with the shoe on the right foot, once with the shoe on the left foot, then it doesn't really matter which foot he's going to do first, the right foot or left foot, because he's the only living brother. So it doesn't matter whether he do this foot first or that foot first, no issue. But if there's more than one living brother, more than one brother who survived the Achameis, then you have a serious problem. Why? Because the Gemara says if the woman does chalitza the small, holds the small chalitza b'sila, it doesn't mean that it ain't a klum. What if instead of taking off his shoe, a leather shoe, she takes off his sock? So that a klum? That's nothing. It ain't a klum. What if she takes off the shoe from his right, from his left foot, instead of taking off from the right foot? The Mishnah says chalitza b'sila. Chalitza b'sila is a technical term that means the chalitza is not good to be mafer her lashuv. But the chalitza was chal b'miktsas, the aina that she's forbidden to do yivum now, on a level of the rice. She's forbidden to do yivum. Not only that, his mother's never ever allowed to yivum.
She is it now.
And then when she's going to have chalitza the second time, when she has chalitza the second time, that's called the chalitza psula. When a woman does chalitza in a situation where she's forbidden to do yivum, but she didn't really have the option of having yivum or chalitza, that's called the chalitza psula. So then whenever she's forbidden to do even then you need chizur. Then she's supposed to have chalitza from all the living brothers. So the question is, if we are machmir, that if the husband is a left-footed individual, he has to do chalitza twice, once with the right foot, once with the left foot, misafik, which is al tidin, the right foot, which is called the yamin. Is it the yamin b'koach, or is it the yamin b'ruchal? The right foot is the right foot. I know, the right foot means the stronger foot. So you do both, and you'll solve the problem. The shahid is, if you do it, if the first chalitza that you did was really not the correct chalitza, and the second chalitza is the good one, so the first chalitza was a chalitza the small, so the second chalitza is going to be called a chalitza psula. So she's doing chalitza at a time that she's unable, she's forbidden al pidin to do yibum now. Then she's going to have to have chalitza from all the brothers. So and we're not going to do that. We don't plan to have chalitza from all the brothers. So you have to arrange it in such a way she should do the chalitza twice, once with the right foot, once with the left foot. You should do the first chalitza that the Yavam does with her should be on that foot that the Rav HaRishonim hold is the correct foot. Oh, so that's the question. Which is the Rav HaRishonim? What the Rav HaRishonim hold? The right is the right, or the right is the stronger foot? So if the first chalitza you'll do is the correct one according to the Rav HaPoskim, then even though there's a niwat haposkim who hold that that first chalitza was not acceptable, and you have to do a second chalitza, since the whole din of chalitza psula tzvich alatzor al kol achim is only a din of the rabbanon, with respect to that din of the rabbanon, you rely on the rov haposkim. With respect to the din derais ishi yivam al ashuk, so we're not going to do both chalitza. With respect to the din of the rabbanon tzvich alatzor al kol achim, that will be made. So don't remember, you got to look in Shulchan Aruch to find out which is the foot that the rov harishonim hold is the correct one. I forgot. I think it's the stronger foot. I think the Rav HaPoskim is the stronger foot. You've got to take a look.
So and what happens if this is when they say that they do it twice, they do it once with the
right foot, once with the left.
Do they do the whole ceremony twice, or when it comes to the part, they can hold
just the shoe? Yeah, just the shoe they do twice.
So why don't we use that thing that you do, you know, anything that you say quick enough within this time from this, you know, whatever so I think is one that counts, and all doesn't count.
Yeah.
So the same thing when you're doing something. It should be like if I just do something and I fix it up, I do it. fix it up right away. They didn't want to try.
That doesn't help. There is a the chumash is that you only need chalitza if the husband died leaving no children at the time of his death. Let's say they had children many years ago and all the children died, but they left grandchildren. But that's okay, he has descendants. But if all the children, all the grandchildren, if she's pregnant at the time the husband dies, so then you have to see what's going to be. You can't do chalitza now, you have to see. If it turns out later she gives birth to a baby, then there's no need for any chalitza. It depends. If, let's say, if she's machil, the husband dies, or whatever, he's killed, whatever it is, and then after the husband dies, she loses the child. She loses the baby. It was never born a bar kayam. Then she will need chalitza later. Let's say the baby's born full-term baby, the baby's born and dies 2 weeks after it's born. So the Gemara says that's okay. If it was a full-term child, called a chadasha, a full-term baby, so even if it dies within 30 days. If it's like called a chadasha, or if it's a suffix, if it's called a chadasha, you don't know. Most of the time you can't tell whether it's a full-term pregnancy or not a full-term pregnancy. So if you can't tell, you know that it was like called a chadasha, then you have to wait 30 days. The baby has to survive 30 days in order that it should be called a chai. But if you know it was a full-term pregnancy, then even if he dies the same day that he was born, as long as he was born alive, even if he dies soon after, I say that is a chai, and it relieves the mother from requiring chalitza. So the question is, what's the definition of a full-term pregnancy? What is called full-term? So the Gemara has a machlokes somewhere, right? Well, the full-term means a full 9 months. A full 9 months. And that's a further machlokes in Ashkenaz. What do you mean full 9 months? 9 months means on the Jewish calendar that 1 month they alternate. 1 month has 29 days, 1 month has 30 days. It doesn't mean on the Goyish calendar, that's for sure. That 1 month has 28 days, 1 month has 31 days, that's for sure. We don't count the Goyish calendar, that's out of the question. The other question is, do we measure 9 months, 9 times 30 days, it's called full-term pregnancy? Or does it mean 9 months on the Jewish calendar, from the time that she became pregnant, alternating 30, 29. So the Gemara, it's a question in Achrenim, but the later Achrenim point out, the Gemara says explicitly it's 9 times 30. There's no room for debate. The Gemara says black and white, it means 9 times 30. So the Gemara has a dispute. Full-term pregnancy means full 9 months, 9 times 30, but does mean into the beginning of the 9th month. You need a full 8 months and at least one day into the 9th month. That's a machlokes. This machlokes, so here the Rambam says, and it's a machlokes, the Rambam and the Ramban had a pasuk. So both doctors. No, it's a medical issue. No, it's a medical question. When is a baby considered a full-term pregnancy that it's a normal baby? Do you need a 9 full months or into the beginning of the 9th month? So it's a machlokes in the Gemara Nida, it's a machlokes the Rambam and the Ramban. They were both doctors, machlokes the Rambam and the Ramban. The Ramon Hilchas Chalitza quotes from the Tashbeis. There were different Tashbeis. There's one that he quotes and there's one that was after him, but he's not going to quote. So he quotes from the Tashbeis that whatever the din was, Bizmana Gemara, Bizmana Rishonim, doesn't matter. Bizmana Zeh and Nishtanu Hatzvoyim. We know that the doctors today say that it's absolutely normal for a woman to have a baby any time into the beginning, after the beginning of the 9th month. Not considered an incomplete pregnancy if the woman has the baby in the 9th month. That's absolutely perfectly normal. So the Rambam says, halacha lemaisa, if the husband died and he left no children and the wife was pregnant, and then after the husband dies the wife gives birth to a baby in the middle of the 9th month, we know for sure it's not a full 9 months. In the middle of the 9th month she gives birth to a baby and that baby dies within the 30 days, we declare that that baby was of lad bar kayama. You only need the living 30 days if it's loy kolo l'chadosh or asafik, kolo loy kolo. But if you know it's vaday kolo l'chadosh, then you don't require that the baby should survive 30 days. So there are more paskins in the name of the Rashbei, so we consider this as a kolo l'chadosh, b'zman hazeh, because mishtanu hatzvoyim, and we know that today that is kolo l'chadosh. That's the question. If that's so we should say the same thing regarding aveilus. Let's say, Rachman Otslan, a baby is born. Full term in the sense that it's born into the, if a baby is born after a full 9 month pregnancy and then the baby dies within 30 days, but then it says that the relatives do have to observe Shiva. They do have to observe Aveilus. Even though the baby died within 30 days. It's not an eifel. An eifel is only if the baby was vada loy kol hadosha v'sofi kol hadosha v'sofi loy kol. But if it's kol hadosha, then it doesn't have to live 30 days. So the question is, this man hazeh, according to this Ramah, maybe you should say the same regarding Hilchos Avelos, that even if the baby is just born in the middle of the ninth month, the Ramah is not even Issa Deraisa, because the woman is Muteris L'Rasa V'Ashur B'li Chalitza. He says, we assume that this man hazeh, that's called Kol HaHadosha, into the beginning of the ninth month. So shouldn't we say B'negeh to Avelos also? That if the baby is born any time in the ninth month, that it's called Kol HaHadosha. And even if it dies within 30 days, that you should, that the relatives should have to observe Avelos. So that's the question. There in Yeradeya, nobody says that. But Ebenezer has a tshuva. He talks about this. Isn't this a contradiction? Once the Ramah says in the end of Ebenezer, Halakha Ma'isa, that we're Matar and Issa Deraisa, we're Matar the Yvam Lashuk B'li Chalitz, because we say that Bizman Azeh, medicine declares that that's called Kol HaHadosha. So it should be the same with Gavi Avelos. Machlek is Halakha Ma'isa, what the din is by Avelos. The chalitza shoe has to be made from leather. The Gemara learns it out from Sukkim. Ve'enolach tachash. Ve'enolach tachash. The question is, the tachash was a kosher animal. Tachash was in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu when they made the Mishkan. They used oros, oros poshim. And the Gemara says in Perek Bamem Adlike, in the second Perek in Masechah Shabbos, that the tachash must have been a kosher animal because lehuchshu lemalach hashemayim alor behemet or gulvad. We have a din and we have a tradition that you're not permitted to use for the tefillin or mezuzah, say the Torah, anything like that, or for the mishkan, anything that comes from a non-kosher animal. So the Rabbi Tam has a comment, and he says, "Legabi the chalitza shu also, you're not allowed to make it from horse leather, because horse is a non-kosher animal. I think most of our shoes are made from horse leather, so you cannot have a chalitza shu made up from regular horse leather. You have to get special leather from a kosher animal." Because it is din of lahukshu. Rabbi Natan says because it says in the pasuk in olach tachash, the pasuk in Yecheskel from which we derive that a shoe has to be made from leather. The pasuk is speaking about from a kosher animal. The way the Rabbi Natan presents it, it sounds like on Yom Kippur you're permitted to even wear regular shoes. Yom Kippur and Tisha B'av, and you're not allowed to have nilos sandal. It sounds from the Rabbi Natan's if it only counts as a sandal if it's from a kosher animal. If it's horse leather shoe, it doesn't count as a shoe. So the Aruch Shulchan says he doesn't think that that's what the Rabbein Tam meant. He thinks that the Pashav Shat and Rabbein Tam is that because of Halitza shoes that is used for a mitzvah, it's a Tashmish mitzvah. So that Gemara in Baba Madlikin is not only limited to Tashmish and Kedusha. The Gemara goof is only talking about Tashmish and Kedusha. That when you want to use leather for the Beis HaMikdash, which has Kedusha, leather for, say, the third tefillin and mezuzah, so then you have to use that for leather from the kosher animal. But the Gemara never says, what if you're going to use leather for Tashmishei Mitzvah, not for Tashmishei Gnusha? The Gemara doesn't say. So the Aruch HaShulchan says that's what the Rabbi Natan most probably had in mind. But since the Chalitza shoe is used for a mitzvah, so you're not allowed to make it from a non-kosher animal.
For regular clothing, you're not allowed to make it, right?
Correct.
Regular,
but once she had Chalitza, then the Gemara says it's forbidden by the Rabbanan for the client to marry the Chalitza.
Okay.
And if he marries the chalutza, then the child will be a ben chalutza, will be a cholo mid rabbana.
There's
a guy here in one of the shuls in Riverdale. His mother was a chalutza and she married a kohen. So he's not allowed to get the first aliyah. The question is, what aliyah does he get? But in Avera he is a kohen. And Avera he is a kohen. He's only not a kohen mid rabbana. I think they always give nafka.
Can you give chalutza and then marry him?
No, the Gemara says that's forbidden. The Gemara learns that from the Pasuk. Once the man does chalitza, he's forbidden to, the Yavam is forbidden to marry. It says, Kofi Yosef Shishel Yivne, based off the Gemara derives, Kimishel Ebana Shuv Lo Yivne. Once he does chalitza, he's forbidden to marry. The question is, what if the Yavam and the Yavam live in two different countries? The question is, there are 1,000 questions. There's a lot to cover. We really should have had maybe 2 shurim on this. Should have had 100 shurim on every topic. There's enough to discuss just halacha, but that too. Enough to discuss on all these very interesting topics. What's the din if the Yavam and the Yavama live far away from each other? One lives in China and one lives in America. And it's very expensive to travel. Can one appoint a shliach in the other country to do the chalitza for them? So that the Yavam cannot appoint a shliach to represent him, that the Yavama should take off the shoe for the shliach's right leg. That we understand. That almost everybody agreed. And those who didn't agree to that, they were really off the walls. That everybody cannot, 99.99% of the government agree that he can't do chalitza de shliach. because the din requires you have to take the shoe off from the yavam's right foot. So the shliach's right foot is not superior to the yavam's left foot. It's just the wrong foot. You're taking off the chalitza shoe from the wrong foot. So that, not everybody agreed that that's utterly ridiculous. But the question is, that's only that the yavam cannot appoint the shliach. What about the yavam? The yavam doesn't have to do anything with her body. She does the mitzvah. She has to spit. Yeah. So you won't be able to do the spitting. So the spitting is not miyakev. No. Spitting is not miyakev. But basically, the only thing that's miyakev is that she has to do the chalitza. So can she appoint the shliach to do the chalitza for? So there was a miyuta, the miyuta of rabbanim in Europe who felt that you can make a shliach, the yavama can appoint the shliach to do the chalitza. The marsham at one time printed a tshuva. The tshuva is marsham that you can appoint the shliach. And that's a couple of other rabbis. Also, there was a rabbi in Boston who allowed chalitza as a shliach. The Gedolim in Europe also said that, I don't know why they didn't call the marsham any dirty name. They said he was wrong. That's all. All of them in Europe said he was wrong. Now, the Nezai is true that the other rabbi was wrong. This rabbi in Boston, they called him all kinds of dirty names. He's a Ben Sarah Murray, and he's a Zakan Mahmoud, he's a Shivon, Ktal, Machabim, Krom, and Kerem Hashem Tzvokas. He's a real shagit. Because of other psalms that he had. He was a cop. He used to pasken everything wrong. This is one of the many things that he pasken wrong. That the Yavama can appoint the shliach. And the yeshivas, everybody knows, Chaim's Torah, everybody knows that you can't appoint the shliach to do chalitza. Neither the Yavama nor the Yavama. The Abdelnezi didn't have a Chaim's Torah. So he stands on his head in the tshuva to try to explain why you can't appoint the shliach. Very shliach. He says, I got many reasons. Aleph, faith, gimel, dalet. Each reason that this is like making up this new psukim, new droshes. He first proves from the Gemara that you can't do like the shliach, but the question is why not? Why can't you appoint the shliach to do chalitza for you? He gives a very difficult reason. The yeshivas, everybody knows, Rav Chaim gives an easy reason why. All fancy shtickle there. Rav Shindishkop has, Rav Chaim. Rav Chaim has a whole yisoid, a whole theme that he developed in a sefer in Hilchos Chalitza, that the only time you can appoint the shliach is if you have power to, you control the whole situation. Can I appoint the shliach to eat breakfast for me? Of course not. Can I appoint the shliach to walk across the street? He'll be across the street. I'll be over here. You can only appoint the shliach if you have control over the situation. You're the bialim, and it's your das that determines whether this is going to take effect or not. He says, about chalitza, I'm not the balabos or anything. I have to do the mitzvah of chalitza. Then the halacha says that the woman is muteres lihinos. It's not that chalitza is a kinyan, but the chacham tzvi was mistapik. But the kavanas, chalitza needs kavanah, it means kavanas kinyan. You have kavanah to be matah. So Rav Chaim says, you don't have kavanah to be matah. Your kavanah is lomal of lomore. The halacha says, once you do the chalitza, you have to have kavanah l'shem mitzvah chalitza. Once you do chalitza, the halacha says that the woman is muteres lihinos l'ashuk. But it's not that you are matah with the power vested in you as what? You're a nobody. A get is a kinyan. You have to give it, you have to make a ma'aseh kinyan. So you can make a shliach to give it again. Kiddushin is a kinyan. All the other things are agreements, contract, you have to have your das. Chalitza is not.
Didn't Victor Sos already knock out this problem by saying that you can't make a shliach for it without the proof?
Right, so we assume that the Yavam cannot appoint the shliach to represent him. That's like a mitzvah shebegufa, because the shliach's right leg will not be superior to the Yavam's left leg. So everybody refers to that thought. You can't appoint the shliach for a mitzvah shebegufa, but the Yavama, why couldn't she appoint the shliach to do the chalitza for her? That shouldn't be considered a mitzvah shebegufa. So the spinning aspect, they all say probably is a mitzvah shebegufa. How can the shliach spin?
But since the mitzvah, what's the mitzvah? It's not how it's done. So that involves
the
goof.
That's a question, but she's only doing the maisa, so why can't she appoint the shliach to do that maisa for us? It depends, you're right, it depends how you understand the statement of the tzos. You could understand the statement of the tzos to cover this case as well, that she would not be able to make any action.
I'm just curious,
who
would this be relevant
to
the
Rabbi in Boston? He published Svarim. No, this is a long time ago. This was 60 years ago. Yul Levitch? Something like that? Oh. Forgot his name. Rabbi Soloveitchik didn't have kind words for him either. The Gemara has it in, I'll close with this one. The Gemara has it in that when the Yavam does the Chalitza, he has to stamp his foot on the floor, like this, before he does the Chalitza. So Nadav Yehuda has an interesting tshuva that he wrote to one of the younger members of his bezin, that this member of the bezin, the young man's daughter, that they have to have a tug of war, that the yavam has to have his foot pushing down on the floor, and she has to yank the shoe out while he's pushing down, she's pulling sideways, and he has to try to fight against her. So he says, my dear friend, it's been a long time since we had a chalitza. You were a little boy then. You don't remember that. That's not the way we did it last time. I'm an old man. I remember. That's not the way we did it 20 years ago. That's not the way we did it 40 years ago. That's not the way we did it 60 years ago. That's not the way anybody ever did it. And that's not the way you're supposed to do it. You just stamp your foot down once and that's all. What's the idea of stamping your foot? See, the other one thought that she has to do the whole chalitza and he shouldn't help her. If he takes off the shoe, it's no good. So if he lifts up his foot and he helps her, that's no good. So he has to fight against us. He has to keep on pushing his foot down into the floor while she's yanking out, while she's trying to pull the shoe out. So everything should be done by her. And then Yehuda said, no, that's not what it means. He doesn't have to give her a hard time. He shouldn't take off the shoe. There's no mitzvah to give her a hard time. It just means to make sure that the shoe fits well. So he should give a stamp on the floor once. There are many, many interesting, you know, some Sefer and others discuss what the shoe is supposed to look like. That's also, the chalitza shoe doesn't look like a normal shoe, anything we have. Maybe I forgot, I should have brought one in. I have to bring in a chalitza shoe, it's not like show. Okay.
Sheer from the hip.